order. We've got a pretty full agenda today, so we'll be quick where we can. Nicole, if you could do the roll call, please.
Faye Gallant, present. Nate Bauer,
present.
Evelyn Tinsgaard, Chad Olson, Jerry Santoro,
present.
Leslie Walls,
here.
Jamie Warwick, thanks, Jimmy. Jesse Atencio. Sue Mitchell.
Here.
Wendy Roop. Chris Brooks. Just joined. Jane Grossclose.
Here.
Matthew Mund.
Here.
Joel Dewey Davidson. Susie Fry, Stacey Havishell, Brandy Marrero,
here.
Katie Miller,
here.
Jessica Armstrong,
here.
Emily Nelson,
here.
Kara Axe,
here.
Dina Jala, Jessica McCallum, Jessica Allard,
present.
Kimberly Newton,
here.
Brad Crick,
here.
Lena Krutikoff,
here.
Yeah.
Janelle Merrifield,
here.
Bill Jacobs,
here.
Christina Thompson is online. Amanda Wall.
Here.
Melissa Parks.
Here.
Trish Winters.
Here.
Connie Heisinger.
Yeah, there she is.
Thanks, Connie. Samara Tabor. Anybody whose name I did not call? Thanks, Wendy. Quorum was met.
Excellent. So next up on the agenda is approval of our agenda for today. We have a motion to approve.
Almost.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, any discussion? Anything anyone wants to add? All right, hearing none, any opposition to the agenda? Okay, we have an agenda. Approval of minutes for staff council meeting number 268, the February meeting. Do you have a motion to approve?
Thank you, Sue.
A second.
Thank you. Any discussion or edits? Okay, hearing none, any opposition? All right, hearing none, the minutes pass. All right, status of pending actions, staff volunteer day proposal and resolution. We did get to discuss this at pre-staff. Nate, do you want to do the update?
Yeah, we do have a little bit more of an update this time than we have over the last few months. We discussed this at length with the chancellor. I don't think it'll come as any surprise to folks that he is still not sure that there's enough support amongst his cabinet. And, you know, I think I mentioned last meeting that he had also sort of reached out to sort of wider, a group of advisory folks that he has around the Fairbanks community. While I think a lot of people in both of those groups recognize the value and the benefit of Staff Volunteer Day, there's just a lot of, I think, hesitance and anxiety around proposing a new effort like this that will cost the university money and, during a time when I think that they're also facing a lot of criticism and cuts elsewhere. So what we talked about is this. From my perspective, and I think from the chancellor's perspective, there are ways to move forward with an effort like Volunteer Day, using staff effort, using the initiative and the resources that the university has as sort of a first step. And so we discussed a few options. I think at this point, from my perspective, what I would like to see happen is for our proposal to go back to our advocacy committee and for them to work out a few of these details in committee and bring it back, I think, to us and to the chancellor in a different form that doesn't include the university donation of time. I recognize that was a core component to our proposal, and I still feel strongly that the university stands to benefit really significantly in some pretty specific ways. And I'm certainly happy to discuss that with anybody here or in the chancellor's office. But for it to make any progress at this point, I think that it seems like we need to propose something that doesn't include that university time. So, I pointed this out before. I don't think it's lost on anyone here that the support that this idea received from the chancellor's office was during a time when the budget had already been decided last year and under a different chancellor who is sort of on his way out. So those conditions are obviously different now, and I think that those are some of the reasons that this hasn't sort of continued with the same level of forward momentum. So that's what I have to say, I guess, about And obviously, the advocacy committee, I think, I hope that that they'd be willing to consider that idea. Obviously, it's open for discussion here in our larger group, too. And I think that there's a few different ways that we could move forward. But I think in order to move forward, we need to approach it from a different angle.
So just a little extra background on that for some of our new folks, too. This is something that had been in various kind of ways of being conceived over the years. At one point there was a proposal through, I think, the compensation committee to have a volunteer leave category that never got much traction because it was, well, if you're getting paid by the university, then are you volunteering? It was kind of the wall it ran into. And then that sort of evolved over time into this idea of a volunteer day as a UAF people getting out in the community in large volumes of people all identifying as UAF and making it really clear that connection we have to the community and the skills that we offer and doing some really high visibility projects in the community. And the proposal that ultimately went forward was that, if it were an 8-hour day, that employees would use 4 hours of their annual leave and then charge, 4 hours of their time as normal to their timesheets, which didn't quite yet address the issue of employees who are on restricted funds who wouldn't have that option, but it was kind of working its way through some of these ideas. With the idea that the university would be volunteering 4 hours of our time and we'd be volunteering 4 hours of our time, so it'd be a partnership. That when that came to the full staff council, there was some concern from representatives as well about the budget circumstances and kind of what message that would send. And then Brian Rogers, when he attended a meeting and spoke in support of the idea and just asked us to wait until after the legislature was out of session last year before passing it on, just to not give the legislature any potential extra fuel to go after our budget. So after his comments, it passed pretty handily with his support. And obviously, the budget situation we're going into this year is a lot harder than even the one that we're currently in. So I think that's kind of a big source of some of the angst about this idea in the Chancellor's office and also with the Community Advisory Board. The Community Advisory Board isn't really something we had access to the first time around, but that's some really valuable perspective because the goal is for this to speak to the community. And if the message they're getting is that the university has time and resources to spend on this, that's maybe not the message we want to send. So that's just some of the background and context. But they continue to be really excited about the idea. And we talked about, you know, trying to get something in place and a structure in place that maybe when we come out of the harder times with the budget, that university match piece could come into reality so that we can keep that.
There's a connection here. These are not, to me, separate issues of perspective from state legislators on the university budget and a misunderstanding about the value that we provide, not just to Fairbanks proper, but also to the communities of all of our campuses and even outside those communities. There's a strong connection in my mind between that sort of lack of understanding and lack of context and the work that we could do as part of something like a volunteer day, a university volunteer day. And I think that the chancellor understands the potential for work that we could do as part of an organized university-wide volunteer day and establishing more awareness amongst state government and budget decision makers about the widespread value that the university provides, that our staff people provide, and that all of the university employees and students provide. So that's why I think that there's still a large amount of enthusiasm and encouragement from the chancellor's office about staff people moving forward with volunteer day in some form. I also don't think it's lost on them that the university stands to get a lot of credit if something like this goes forward. That's originally why, from the University Advocacy Committee's perspective, that it made sense for the university to volunteer work hours to contribute to this as a sort of partnership. It just remains very difficult, especially for the next 30 or 45 days, to make a commitment like that. So, for the rest of the academic year, it seems like instead of just waiting and continuing to wait for conditions to change or for opinions to change, nuanced opinions and positions to change amongst the core cabinet folks, that we could be doing work as a staff body to make decisions and sort of do a first step of a volunteer day where, you know, we're using annual leave or we're using a day on the weekend or something in an organized way, because there are resources and capabilities that the university has and that our own selves as staff members have to organize efforts like this and to plan efforts like this and to design it so that we can start to show the success and the benefits of a proposal like this before the university is committing their own money to it.
That's two things. First, is there any way to raise the lighting in here slightly? For some reason, it's like freezing out.
Yeah, sorry, Nicole asked me about that. And I was like, no, it's so nice.
It's moving.
Right.
Yes, I'm still waking up.
Yeah.
And then the other was, what organization would be the one, if we decided just to do where you volunteer your hours, would it be like this body? Like, would it be like they would kind of organize that? I'm just kind of curious on.
It's a good question. So, part of exercise. Part of the reason that I think the planning of the idea itself became a little bogged down is because it required the process of proposing this to the chancellor sort of required us to keep the language pretty vague about how it would be implemented and planned out. There were a lot of pieces, including HR pieces and that kind of thing, that we were sort of required to leave pretty open-ended. So I think that the way that this version of the proposal came forward, it was the University Advocacy Committee of Staff Council that did a lot of the creation and the planning of the idea in the first place. But if there's anybody here that has better or clearer ideas about individual pieces of the proposal, this is probably a good time to make those kind of changes.
I would say probably going forward, I would expect that staff council would be the group leading the effort, specifically the advocacy committee, dealing with coordinating it, figuring out what it would involve and all of that. So it would certainly involve partnering with some other organizations on campus, but I think that, yeah, if it's going to happen, it'll happen because we make it happen.
Do we have a goal on, like, what date or time frame we want to have our first volunteer day?
I think that would be up to the advocacy committee to, at this point, basically what we've got is the plan on the table, specifically the university match won't work, but they're supportive of the idea and would like us to kind of take it back to committee and come up with a real detailed plan to bring forward. And I would expect that detailed plan to have a rough time frame for dates involved. So is the advocacy committee willing to take that charge back up? I know you guys put a lot of work into this in the first place, so I don't want to frustrate you too much.
Yes. Initially, I would just observe that it seemed helpful to identify, a week. And I think that when we thought about it, when it came through the committee, a year ago, identifying like weeks during the school year when there was perhaps less strain on staff. So maybe, Thanksgiving week in the fall or spring break week in the spring, when there might be a little bit more flexibility in terms of schedules. And then taking a week, per term, perhaps, and, encouraging staff to find time during that week, to take a full day of annual leave at this point would be the idea. Yeah.
So, Jamie, is that okay with you?
She typed it in chat to me. So she says, I think so. I don't know that it was going to go that direction, but I think it would be a good thing to work on.
Okay. Great. Right. Thanks, Jamie. All right. I think we have someone here for a public comment. Great. So let's move on into that now, because I know we're a little bit behind, and then we can come back to Volunteer Day later if you guys have more discussion on it. So go ahead. Let's give it a try.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I want to thank you all for being involved in governance. This is very trying times for all of us. I thank you for what you're doing to support staff on governance. I want to invite you to celebrate International Women's Day, Tuesday, March 8th, tomorrow, on behalf of the Women's and Gender Studies program here at UAL. To celebrate the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. Yet we also need to recognize, as we celebrate, that progress has slowed in many places across the world and even here in Alaska. Urgent action is needed to accelerate gender parity. Leaders across the world are pledging to take action as champions of gender parity. What you can do: put gender on your agenda today and beyond. Tomorrow, right out here outside the Wood Center Ballroom, you'll have a chance to make a pledge for parity. Everyone, men and women, have pledged to take concrete steps to help achieve gender parity more quickly, whether to help women and girls achieve their ambition, call for gender balanced leadership, respect, and value difference, develop more inclusive and flexible cultures, or reach out workplace office. Each of us can be a leader within our own spheres of influence and commit to take pragmatic action to help include and advance women. Share amongst your friends, social networks, and communities. Take a selfie pledge at our selfie station outside here and encourage others to make a pledge as well. Together we can accelerate the equity clock. If you're not here at the listener tomorrow, you can pledge at internationalwomensday.com and share on social media with hashtag pledge for parity. Well, gender parity is important, but you probably know that yourself, so I won't go on with that. But if you come tomorrow and grab one of these pledges, you have a number of cool ones, you can take a selfie and help pledge for parity. It's around the world, it's International Women's Day tomorrow, and pledge for parity. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming, because I'm surprised that this is the first I'm hearing about this, so I really appreciate you coming and speaking to us directly, and I think we can share that message with the people we represent as well, so that hopefully more people know about this, because that's great that you're working on this. Does anyone have any questions? All right. And the folks online, too, you guys heard how you can participate via distance options. All right. Thank you. Okay, officers report. So, I'd say probably the biggest item on my list has been the chancellor search, which we have coming up an update on that under unfinished business. So I'll just say now that we had the interviews last weekend of the semifinalists, and I was incredibly pleased with our options. We had a really, really competitive pool, and I'm also very pleased with our finalists. So we'll get into a little more of the nuts and bolts of that under the Chancellor Search update up ahead. I also had a meeting last week with President Johnson as Chair of Staff Alliance, and most of our conversation centered obviously on strategic pathways, which is his biggest priority, or along with the budget, but you know, his real effort right now. And so one thing I tried to stress was when we're talking about people being involved and having this be a transparent process, that rolling something out and asking people to provide feedback on it is not always the best, most interactive way, and that it would get a lot more traction and feel a lot more inclusive if people were involved at the table up front in participating in drafting things and coming up with, you know, the analysis and the criteria before it goes out to feedback. So if we're just providing feedback on something that happens in a closed room in the Butrovich building, it feels, once we get to see it, like, what is this? Where did this come from? Who did this? You know? And he seemed pretty open to that. So we discussed kind of the ways governance could be involved other than just coordinating feedback. And one option that he'll be thinking of, and I hope he ends up deciding on it, is that the system governance leaders, including Staff Alliance, could nominate or appoint people to some of the work teams that'll be going forward over this summer with the analysis of the first kind of wave of programs. So we can talk a little bit more about the timeline and so forth when we get to that on unfinished business, but I think that would give us an opportunity to be more proactively involved and would also kind of value the importance of pieces of information that really you're only going to get from staff who work in these things day to day on those analysis teams, and also help ensure that we get a campus perspective there in that room. So I'm hopeful that he ends up deciding on that. He seemed very open to it and like he was thinking that was a good way to go while we were in that meeting, but you know, I know he has pretty much meetings every moment of the day, so I'm hoping that kind of stuck in his head. And we can follow up with him on that as well. We're going to have a kind of shorter term interim meeting of the System Governance Council that we'll meet with him to talk more about strategic pathways. So hopefully when we have that meeting, we can talk a little bit more about that role. When Leslie gets here to do the student governance report, I hope she'll give us an update on their legislative advocacy efforts in Juneau. Certainly what I heard on that was that our students just did a fantastic job. Basically, the student governance leaders from the three universities all went down to Juneau. They all agreed on a common platform between the three universities that they then advocated for. And the platform they agreed to was, one, supporting the governor's budget and passing the governor's budget in full. The second was opposing SB 174, the guns on campus bill. And then the third was funding the UAS engineering building, which I think was pretty excellent that students from Anchorage and Juneau agreed to that as one of the core principles that the team would be advocating for. So hopefully we can thank Leslie when she's here. I know she was one of the people really coordinating that effort while she was down there. We will have Regent Jo Heckman at our next staff council meeting. She's the chair of the Board of Regents. I know she's speaking to Faculty Senate this afternoon, and Nicole wonderfully saw that and said, oh, would you like her to come speak to you guys? Is that an option? I said, yes, that would be fantastic. The more the Board of Regents have that interaction with us and kind of see the diversity and the amount of perspectives and the type of things we're working on here, the more they can kind of understand our role and also what we have to offer, and then we can also have a dialogue with her about strategic pathways. She'll be coming at the beginning of the meeting, and she may actually be able to just stay for a while and kind of listen and hear what we're talking about. A budget update. So the House Finance Subcommittee passed their recommendation for the university budget at $300 million. The governor's proposal was $335, and what the university had asked for was about $350. So that $300, that would hurt quite a bit still. It's pretty rough numbers. But the full Finance Committee in the House will be going through and putting in amendments, so it'll be possible that on the House side that number will grow probably today, actually. And so they'll be amending it to put money back in, is usually how it works. That $300 would be our new worst-case scenario. The Senate Finance Subcommittee started with $325 million for the university, which is $10 million harsher than the governor's budget. Still pretty harsh for us overall, but certainly a lot better than that $300 number. So the process there is each of these subcommittees has put their budget forward. It goes to the full committee. The full committee will amend, and then they'll pass. And then if those two final numbers from the House and Senate are different, then they come together in conference committee to agree on a final number. And then that goes to the governor. So we're still looking at probably, late April before the legislature agrees on a number, and then ideally in mid-May we'd sort of know what we're looking at for the next year. Last year that didn't happen. It got delayed for quite a long time, and so we were many months behind, but the subcommittees at least are moving pretty quickly this time around. So. And just a reminder that you are free to, in your own time and from your own phones or computers, to contact your representatives and speak to the importance of the university. One thing that the chancellor has stressed is that the message resonates a lot more strongly when you kind of put something else on the table. So I know personally my message to them was take my PhD in from the university. So I called the subcommittee members and then I emailed my actual representative so that when it got to the full house that he could advocate on our behalf as well. So just a reminder that you have that option. It's really easy to do. You can find all the contact information on the website. I was a little nervous calling. This is the first time I've ever actually called, and Tammy Wilson herself picked up the phone. But she was very polite, and it was actually a pretty painless process overall. So if you're feeling intimidated by it, I would say just gather up your courage, and it's not nearly as scary as it might initially feel. I did phone and email, and I think they counted it both ways. Like they said, this number of phone calls and this number of emails. So, yeah, if you want to email first to practice your points, that's going to be a good way to go. So,
what did she say?
She said, well, it's a starting point. Her number, which was at that time was 285, I think, 287, and that she expected more would be put back in. It was clearly hurried. They were getting ready to go into their final committee, but you know, I basically said, no, this is important. I'd rather be taxed and lose my PhD than have that at this level to the university. And she said, okay, thank you. And then that was pretty much it. I did hear her staffers were telling people, so her proposal originally was to come up with a base number based on our instructional expenditures. So basically, anything we spent on research or public service and outreach, we didn't need that as the starting point. And so then a lot of people were calling to talk about why it was so important that we funded research and public service, and parish staffers were telling people, oh, actually, you should call the Board of Regents because they decide how the money's spent. We just give a base number. So she didn't say that to me, which I was glad for because I might have lost my temper. But I will say, yeah, it was pretty painless. It was very polite, and I think if you just have a few quick points to rattle off, that helps. So I'll just wrap that up there. And I think probably everyone saw the chancellor's message on the budget that went out, I believe, last week, kind of talking about the timeline and the process as well. So I'll wrap up there because I know that was a long report. Does anyone have any questions? Okay.
I just have a couple things. I'll be quick. So the first thing, I would just echo what Faye said about getting in touch with your representatives in the state legislature. It's clear that the university has already distinguished itself amongst our legislators as providing a strong, sizable response to budget anxieties. And I think the better we can do at sustaining that response and that input, the better. So, should feel encouraged. Second thing, planning a budget committee, sort of related. We've been meeting, I think, like I said last time, the priorities, it seems like, for this committee shift a little bit each time we meet, and that's partly because conditions shift in between the time we meet. We meet usually once a week, roughly. And so there are a number of sort of high priority issues, including strategic pathways, including subcommittee, including committee, finance committee, including sort of on-the-ground conditions here, budget-related conditions at UAS. Last meeting, the result was a draft of a response letter from the committee to President Johnson, which has actually been in the drafting process for about a month. But we do have a draft of that letter if anybody would like to see it. It includes language about, I think probably the clearest language yet about what the Planning and Budget Committee is. So maybe instead of reading the whole letter, I'll just read that language in case there's anybody that wonders about the purpose of the Planning and Budget Committee, because sometimes that's not always clear. And I think it changes from year to year. But it says, the UAF Planning and Budget Committee is a broadly representative group of employees appointed and chaired by Provost Susan Henrichs that advises Chancellor Scorcana on budget decisions and institutional change. The committee has met annually for about the past 20 years, but the tasks of the committee have changed as UAF's financial circumstances changed. So last year, the committee was in charge of developing ideas that had been forwarded to the vice chancellors and were then reviewed by the provost and her group of VCs. This year, the process, I think I've mentioned this before, is kind of reversed, where vice chancellors were in charge of reviewing all the activities, you know, under their watch, coming up with proposals of their own, and then submitting those to the PBC, to the Planning and Budget Committee. We have yet to actually start that process of review. Part of that delay is because of Strategic Pathways, which has been sort of on the front burner of this committee for the past 6 weeks or so, since we first saw sort of the first version of Strategic Pathways from the President's office. We'll observe, just kind of frankly and personally, that there seems to be a little bit of a struggle around UAF about what our sort of major sort of first priority concern should be at this point when it comes to strategic pathways. What I've heard on this committee and sort of in some other contexts from the provost level is that strategic pathways is like really super important, and we need to provide like really detailed and specific feedback now, because if we don't, we're gonna lose that opportunity, and it's gonna become a plan before we have a chance to change what that plan looks like. From the chancellor, if anybody attends the forum, the chancellor on the budget, I think his perspective has been more, there's plenty of time. Strategic pathways is a long-term thing. It's like a 5 or 10 year process, and so our focus and our priority on the front lines here should be next year's budget, the year after that, sort of immediate FY17, FY18 budget issues, contacting our legislators and so on. So I think both of those things are, it seems like both of those things are extremely important. We should be focused on both of them, but it's hard to say, again, this is just my perspective, but it's hard to say which one of them folks should be focused on more. I don't know if there's a clear answer to that, at least from our university's leadership.
I would say the Board of Regents also have not been consistent within the group on sort of some of the timeline and urgency of strategic pathways. From some of them, it's, no, this is a very slow, long process. We're just starting to, like, even wrap our heads around the idea of what it might be. And other ones are going, nope, like, clearly the budget circumstances are making this something that needs to happen yesterday. So I think until we get a little more clarity from the regents, or the regents get more clarity from the regents, it's going to be hard for the university to, especially the universities, UAF, UAA, and UAS, to really figure out how best to respond and kind of what timeline we're on those pieces. I'd say I think the president has a pretty clear timeline, and in his mind. But on the campuses, we are sort of struggling to juggle those two pieces and figure out how they might interact in the near term.
Seems like some of that is the result of what is seemingly a disconnect between, you know, I think that you mentioned it about your meeting with Jim Johnson. I think that, you know, on one hand, I think it was clear from the time we met with him as the single candidate for his job that he valued transparency, he valued feedback, he valued interaction at early and many stages of the decision-making process. And I think he continues to sort of say that kind of stuff. At the same time, you know, while he and others continue to try and make the point that this strategic pathways is not a plan and it's just a concept, the more that he talks about it, the more the Board of Regents talk about it, the more it seems like it's a plan that didn't have feedback or didn't have input at early stages. And that seems to be a little bit of a disconnect. So that's a little bit frustrating. But that's all I have. I'd like to talk about 174, but I know that's on the agenda later, so we'll talk about that.
All right. Oh, Matthew.
I just had a quick, on that same contact with the strategic pathways, that it seems like a lot of administration kind of take it as being like the way everything's going towards. Like, it almost seems like, oh, that's where we're going, and it's just, I guess that it's not communicated as this is an idea. It's like, oh, that was a decision that they could. I've done a lot of work already, like, you know, kind of in that direction.
Yeah.
In our own department, running numbers and projections and stuff. So it's just kind of, where is that coming from? And if it is really just an idea, if that can be communicated a little more strongly. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would make, and I have tried to make that point to many people, because I know that there's a lot of speculation, there's a lot of assumptions, like, all across and up and down the university. And so I think when I come in contact with those conversations, I think my point is generally that these decisions have not been made. But it's hard to say that when there are people on the Board of Regents acting and speaking as if those are decisions that have been made.
So we do have this under unfinished business as well, and I think that would be a good place to talk about sort of the timeline and what decisions have been made and which haven't. If you guys don't mind just holding off until then, because I know we do have Orion Lawler from Faculty Senate in the room, and I don't want to hold him hostage. So. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So we'll see. Is this nice?
Yeah.
Okay, how about this? That one might work.
It takes a second. Yeah.
Testing. There we go. So, in part, you can sort of use that we don't, it's sort of an order of magnitude uncertainty in the magnitude of budget cut. So, we're talking about planning around that. So, if other stuff's happening, and we can help, we're sort of in the center of the discussion of how we, if we have to cut programs, how do we decide which programs to cut? Who initiates the cut? How do we, should we agree to the cut, or should we just say our deals on the smallest one and see what, see what we get forced into doing? So it's that process. So we're interested in what you said, this expedition of the department. So, for example, my department, we gave up a master's in software engineering because we sort of looked at the fact that we had, and looked at the expertise we had, and those resources we had, and we realized we had some of the students that we had. We didn't have a lot of those things to kind of give out of the program, so we got back into the conference of potentials. Then we began a master's degree, and that hurt. That was not easy, but we got the papers we had that we did initiate this about 3 years ago. And we I don't know what's going on.
turn that one off.
Is this any better? Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if you have good ideas on how to efficiently cut the budget without making anybody unhappy. This is definitely the time to suggest those, because no one else has any clue on how to do that. I feel like that's the big thing. We have there's some other semi-minor policy updates happening. So I think they're the same ones I told you about earlier. So I don't think there's any new big ones. Any questions for me?
Orion, do you happen to know? I know you guys have a lot of chairs here, obviously set up. I'm assuming in anticipation of Regent Heckman's comments today, is that open? Could people come and
absolutely
in the back?
That's the public area.
So yeah, I would just then say, you know, we do have Regent Heckman coming to our next meeting next month. But if you'd like to hear her comments this afternoon, then 1 o'clock, and maybe we'll just to make sure that faculty have plenty of chance and opportunity. I would suggest that staff council members attending, you know, try and stay towards the back and be quiet, and then we'll get our shot front and center with her next month. But I'll plan on being here at 1 and listening to her comments today. So just if that's an option for you guys, then go ahead. Are there meetings? Can people like get on the Hangout and listen quietly as well now that it's not a... Okay. All right. So sorry, online folks. We will have Regent Heckman at our next meeting. So, okay. Thanks, Orion.
Thanks.
All right. And I don't see Leslie. Like I said, I think that the biggest thing from ASUAF was that student advocacy down in Juneau. I heard great reports. They had a rally in front of the legislature that sounded like it went very well and was very positively received. They had a lot of meetings where, you know, that student voice that the legislators really take most seriously. And so the fact that the students were advocating for the budget against the guns bill and for the UAF engineering building, I think was hopefully very impactful, and we'll see what happens in the next few days with the budget and so forth. But, so if you see Leslie or Matthew or Colby or other student senators, just thank them maybe if you get the chance. Okay, so unfinished business. Staff mentoring interest survey. Do we have any updates on that? Okay, thanks, Jamie. Chancellor search update. Like I said, we did our interviews not this immediately past weekend, so about a week ago. We had 10 semifinalists. The interviews were fantastic. We had really, really strong options to choose from. We settled on 4 semifinalists who will be coming for on-campus visits the end of this month. So not next week, but starting the week after and then the week after that. Each candidate will be here for a day and a half, 2 days, and there'll be loads of meetings, obviously, with the president, with the deans and directors, with the public, and then on the second morning, they'll have kind of focus meetings with one meeting with students, one meeting with staff, and one meeting with faculty. And the process for that will probably be that staff council sort of hosts the staff session. So it'll be open to all staff, but we'll be expected to sort of be making sure there's some good questions and kind of taking the lead in that space. and getting the word out and trying to, you know, get people there. So we decided that was, instead of having meetings with the governance groups specifically and then one large open forum, that it would be better to have a staff forum, a student forum, and a faculty forum that governance groups were engaged in part because in those open forums, from my perspective, in those open forums, you know, staff tend to be pretty, we might sideline ourselves a bit, you know, because faculty will always have lots of questions and answers, and we always want to give students the space to ask, so to make sure that all staff really have an opportunity to participate, having those focused forums was something that we thought would be a good idea, and then as governance leaders, we'll just be expected to be, you know, be there if you can be there, and then, you know, be participating and asking questions, and kind of, and we'll get more details on what that'll look like. So, yeah, then we will have, I'm sure, you know, feedback intake forms after those meetings. And then I think the search committee will kind of coalesce some final feedback on each of the finalists, give them to the president, and then the president will make his final decision on who to hire, basically, on who to make the offer to. So I'm very excited to have them up here and to have you guys see these people. Yeah.
At what point do we, what point are their names announced?
As soon as their travel bits are fully confirmed. Basically, there's, if something happens and it falls through and someone can't make it, we do have two alternate candidates, but it wouldn't be great to know, oh, this is the alternate and not the full one, and it wouldn't be great for the alternates to know that they're alternates either. So we just make sure that as soon as it's booked and confirmed, which I expect will be this week, then the names will be out there, as well as kind of their bios and a little sketch and some photos and all that. So I think one of the things I'm excited about is that I think, like I said, the candidates are all really strong. They're all very different from each other. So I think it will feel like a real choice, you know, like we'll really be able to choose a chancellor that represents something in particular. You know, there's a lot of variety in their backgrounds and their perspectives and their personalities and their approach. But I think all would do a really great job for the university by this time. They've all been through budget stuff before, similar budget situations as well. So I don't think I can say much more than that about the candidates at this point, but once the names have been announced, then I can talk more freely. Any questions about the chancellor search? So the goal is for, I think, President Johnson to make that offer in April and then get them up here as soon as possible after that offer is made. So before July 1st, sooner, if they're able to get here sooner. All right. Outstanding Staff Council Achievement Award. So the nomination deadline is this month, March 25th. The link to the submit the nominations is on the agenda here. So just to speak about that a bit, this is for any staff council member except the officers. So Nate and I are not in the running. You can nominate them for their outstanding contributions to staff council over the last year. Please do so. I know we have probably a lot of real good contenders, so I'd like to see those names flowing in. If you have any questions about that, then just let us know. But the link's right there. It's open. You've got a couple weeks. Okay. Proposed new regulation on telecommuting. I saw a few real good points on the Google Doc that was shared for commenting. I know Sue had a few, a couple others, but I'd say maybe like four people probably commented on that. So I'd like to get that feedback wrapped up and send a summary send a summary up to artists and CC the chancellor so that that can, you know, we can kind of close that one up. So I'd say if you haven't looked at it yet, please take a look this week. And then Friday will be my goal to send a memo with our feedback out. So if you haven't looked at it yet, please do so this week, and I'll just set a deadline for collecting that feedback of this Thursday.
Does Staff Council have, as a body, do we have an opinion on, you know, is it appropriate to have out-of-state workers, or do we prefer that our staff are here in the state?
We have not taken that up at all.
Okay.
If that's something that we'd like to have as a discussion item for the next meeting, we could, although I suppose if we decided it wasn't, telecommuting would still apply to in-state employees as well in some positions.
Yeah, but I think the agreement was really focused on the cost affiliated with out-of-state staff.
Yeah. Does anyone want to talk about that right now? We could. I mean, that could also be a piece of the feedback we submit as well. So if you wanted to start that in the Google Doc as a comment, if there was a thought there, then we could do that too. All right, anything else on telecommuting? All right, so yeah, if you have thoughts on that you want to put in the feedback, then I can at least put it forward in the feedback as, you know, this was something that, you know, came up that we realized hadn't really been part of the conversation, you know, and put it that way.
Okay.
Sure. All right, so strategic pathways. We'll dive back into that. Margo, how are you on time? Do you mind if we take a few more minutes before we get to you? Okay, thanks. All right, so if you haven't looked at it yet, there is a slightly more fleshed out document beyond the one slide on the Strategic Pathways website. If you just Google UA Strategic Pathways, it'll take you there. The last page of that document includes a timeline. So basically, my understanding of the timeline and from speaking with President Johnson is that he'll be establishing criteria for the phase one programs and then put those criteria out for feedback, basically. People agree on the criteria. Those programs would be the phase one, so that might be things like low enrollment. It might be ones that we have multiple programs, like multiple master's or professional degrees across the universities. And then those phase one programs, the summer will be a bunch of data collection and starting kind of the number crunching and analysis and scenarios. And then these teams will basically be working, once faculty come back on contract in the fall, these teams will kind of be working through, all right, you know, do we have a lead for this? If so, is it, which of the lead models should it be? Is it a strong lead, as in only this one offers it? Is it a, you know, does this one not have a lead, or we have multiple leads, or, you know, what model will be applied to it? And so they'll work through that and make their recommendations. And his thought is that at the next, so the February 2017 Board of Regents meeting, the regents would make decisions based on the feedback on those phase one programs, or on the work team's recommendations for the phase one programs.
March 27th? Or?
No, sorry, the February 2017.
2017, oh.
2017, yeah, sorry. So that we're basically a year out from any decisions about what would happen with programs, but we're, in the short term, would be identifying which programs would be the first to be analyzed, basically, and adjusted based on the strategic pathway model. And then there would be a second and a third wave of programs after that. And obviously with the timeline, I think part of that 5 to 10 year timeline is I think they're including the teach-out periods there, which is that we have an obligation to any student at the University of Alaska if we decide not to continue offering their degree program, even if they've just enrolled that week, we have to give them the opportunity to finish their degree in a reasonable amount of time, so, you know, 4 to 6 years or whatever. So that could have some implications for strategic pathways, depending on also then if things are offered distance or how that works. So I think when they talk about that very long timeline, they're including teach out in it. I think probably the decisions would be made in the next couple of years. So really what has been decided is here's a framework, we're going to be putting programs through it and then making decisions about them. I'd say what hasn't been decided is if you look at the first slide where it says who's lead, you know, right now who's lead and what hasn't been decided is that, you know, School of Management will just be at UAA. You know, that's not a decision that's been made. Or, you know, UAA won't be doing research. That's not a decision that's been made. So it's more, these are things that we'll evaluate, and then it could be that for this program, the lead model structure is X, and for this other program, the lead model structure is Y. And so things might look very different for each one. So I'd say there's a lot up in the air in terms of what any of this actually means, you know, and what impacts there might be to students or to faculty and staff. But what does seem to have been decided is this is the approach we are taking. We're going to evaluate things kind of using this structure and model, and we'll be, you know, looking to make real decisions within this framework. So I think that the framework is they're quite committed to. It's just the what does that actually look like when implemented? That's still a giant question mark. So any questions or discussion there? And it'll be interesting to see what Regent Heckman says this afternoon on that topic as well. But that was certainly from meeting with the president. The impression I got is he's moving all engines, full steam ahead on the framework of strategic pathways and the model of strategic pathways. It's just any decisions about individual programs are still a year out. As long as we get a decent budget. If we get a $300 million budget, probably things will move a lot faster. They would want to use the general philosophy of strategic pathways when making budget cuts this year. So.
Let's see. Yeah. I noticed on his schedule, the strategic pathways website, it says for April to June of this year that it says admin convenes governance for input on phase one and suggestions on review process.
Yeah,
April. Do we know what that's going to look like or how governance will be included?
Yeah, I think he'll probably, I think his general, the feeling I get about his approach is that he would meet directly with System Governance Council. So that's the leadership of Staff Alliance, the Coalition of Student Leaders, Faculty Alliance, and then Alumni. So right now that would include me and Monique Music from Statewide from the staff piece. And Monique is the chair of that. And then I do think that the governance groups would still continue to, you know, basically there would be the feedback on phase one. We'd probably have a new feedback form as well. That would be up for that piece and collecting there because we just closed out the feedback on the first slide, basically. So, yeah, that feedback on phase one would be the feedback on the criteria and programs that would be the first to be looked at. And then the review process, that might be governance, you know, appointing people to the review teams. I think it would be, you know, how do we structure this? So,
thank you.
I expect he'll come to the table with ideas for us to weigh in on. Has certainly been his approach. So, any other questions or comments on strategic pathways? Matthew, did that sort of answer your question? Thanks. Yeah, I think, Chris, that they will continue sending out emails whenever there is something new to look at, but that Pathways website will be there, and once governance has a new form as well for the next wave of feedback, that'll be also on the governance or Pathways website. All right. So draft performance evaluation feedback. If I'd like to wrap that piece up as well and get that feedback back to HR so that they can kind of roll that form out as something more than draft, because they've been asked for it. People have been wanting to use it. So I think they're looking forward to kind of finalizing that task. So I would also say then if we could put a deadline of Thursday this week also on feedback for that. So those are two things that are out for feedback that I'd like to wrap up.
Was there a Google form for feedback for the performance evaluation?
Yeah, there's... Oh, it didn't go up. Okay. No, I think it's just been pieces of email. What we've gotten has been email.
Okay, so you'd like email to you by Thursday with feedback?
That might be easiest. We tried to do a Google form, but the... what I like to do is put the document up in Google Docs that people can comment. So then you can see, okay, somebody already commented there, it's good, or have discussion in the comments bit. But this form had, it was such an interactive form with the drop-down boxes and everything that the formatting went completely bonkers. And then we tried putting it up as an image, and then that was harder to comment on. so overall, I think if you could just send me your comments or... if you've shared it with your groups and they have comments, just send them to me via email. And what I'll do then on Friday for both of those, I will kind of draft summary, a summary bit of here's our feedback, and I'll send that back out to the group so you guys can see what I'm planning on sending forward before I actually send it. I would say if you can get me feedback and comments on that form by Thursday afternoon, I'd appreciate it. Okay, and our last piece on unfinished business is that we are opening the nominations for the 2016-2017 officer elections. So if you would like to nominate someone or nominate yourself to serve as president or vice president in the coming year, you can submit a nomination to Nicole, and pretty much all you have to do is just email Nicole, I'm nominating whoever. It's a pretty easy process. So hopefully we'll have a lot of candidates. It's nice to have a robust selection. All right. Any questions?
All right. Quickly clarify, nominations for the officers are open to all staff council represented staff. So if there's someone who wants to, I don't know if that's ever happened, but if there's someone who's not on council who wants to run for office, they can do that.
Thanks for clarifying, Brad. That's true. So the election is in May. And the term of service is 1 year. And if anyone has any questions about, what's involved in being an officer or anything like that, just feel free to contact us. Well, thanks, Chris. All right, I think we'll take a short break now so that Nicole and Margo can get set up for the page up presentation. So if you guys could be back in, let's shoot for 5 minutes.
Department of Officers is in Auburn now, so if you haven't had information disseminated through your unit, please talk to your GPA or your consultant. These are really geared towards supervisors, recruiters, and HR users at this point. And recruitment must be closed out within 30 days of the go-live date. And that is, it's kind of interesting because it's a very strong cutoff point. Once we hit that April 8th, we cannot get into UH jobs anymore. This is what our splash page is going to look like for applicants. This is what they're going to see. Now, please understand this is a graph. It's not complete, but it gives you an idea kind of what it looks like. The picture up there will rotate between the different campuses. It will have UAS, UAA, UAS, and your system. And once an applicant goes here and they want to apply for a job, this is what the recruitment page will look like. Again, this is draft. It's a little sparse right now. These are just some text divisions, but again, it just gives you an idea of what it'll look like. The search functions for this particular system are a lot more in-depth and easier for users, so that's going to be really nice. Do you have any questions on the career portal?
If applicants already have an application in the UAK job, will they be able to port it to this new?
We're going to have to take it on a case-by-case basis. So some of the positions that are out there, we're going to have to manually move over. Some of the positions we're hoping will be closed out and we'll pair them in the new system with that 30-day overlap. So yes, if there are positions out there and the recruitment's not finalized, we'll have to migrate them over. If they're going to go beyond the end of April, that's 30-day window. The one thing that folks need to be clear about is if a recruitment is finalized, maybe we take off, although this is active, the employee presumably won't be able to go through the onboarding process. So it's going to be a weird transition for a couple of months. If an employee is hired through my way, they will have the ability to go through an onboarding process. The system is all the incredibly work, the training, you know, the task list for training, the contract letter, and the offer stage all through the system. So all of that new hire paperwork will actually be pushed into Banner. It'll allow us to get more heat sooner. People will get their emails quicker. A lot of those lags that we've been experiencing, we're hoping to reduce them. Any other questions about that?
Margo?
Please keep in mind, this is a very brief overview. We go into much more detail at 4 hours in the walkthrough. So I'm really glancing over kind of the highlights.
I was thinking in terms of in UAK jobs, not the applicant perspective, but the employer perspective of having a position description and the very long and convoluted workflow so that a position is posted and goes through the review stage. That's going to be covered in your 4-hour walkthrough, I suspect.
Yeah, and I'll show you what that's going to look like in a minute, at least a quick snapshot of it.
Margo,
I have a question
online.
Okay.
Oh, hey, guys,
ready?
Yes.
Okay, hi, Margo.
Hi.
Thank you. Now, there's a question.
Hey, Chris, you're breaking up. Would you mind just typing your question in? We can't really hear you.
Yeah, that's me, but I know.
Okay, yeah, Chris, we can't hear you, so if you want to type your question, oh, there it is.
Chris is asking, is this something that our hiring department has already been notified of?
Yeah. They can be negative and notified of this, and they can call the server with their CPA as well. So if there are specific questions, consultants are working specifically with departments. And as we go through the presentation, I'll let you know there are some more workshops that we can bomb that are going to be presented to folks that are in here today. Now we're transitioning over to my UA Academy career site, so that is what applicants are going to see. This is the site that once someone is hired as an employee, that we're going to see as administrators and employees. Again, the goal line is March 28th. There are department officers that are going to be presented during March 21st. The reason we have to wait till the 21st is because they're uploading data from UAKF. That data will be pulled the week of March 14th. So anything after the 11th, we're asking folks to log off and we'll have to manually transition it over. This is what the MyUA site looks like when you go to log in. It's probably a little difficult for folks to see, but I can share this presentation after the meeting. You go to the link, universityofalaska.pageofpeople.com, and that will lead you to the login. It is a single sign-in, just like you have for UA Online. So the schedule is just like that over Scanner. And then the colorful page down the bottom, that is actually what the dashboard looks like. So there's no more just switching around within the system to try to figure out what role you're in or what you need to do. It has all of the right there.
Margo?
Yes.
How will the average employee interface with this? Like, is this where our timesheets are going to be? Or is this just for PPAs mainly to use?
This is going to be only for the recruitment, performance management, and e-learning module. So timesheets
will go through the online. So real quick, Margo, when you say performance, we're talking like performance evaluations and then e-learning and training for like professional development and your training,
yeah.
Required trainings that are available online would be tracked through here as well.
Correct. Right now, though, we are only doing the recruitment and onboarding piece. Those will come along towards July.
Right.
Thanks. No problem. So I logged into my profile. This is what it will look like once you log in. And once we have all of the modules up, you can see there's onboarding, micro monitoring, my development, recruitment, and team performance reviews. So this will be where you're going to switch between the different modules, but partners in the same area, so it's pretty sparse looking. And again, this is, I just put a note on here, the e-learning and the performance management module won't be active until July. Online, if you go to the alaska.edu website, it's alaska.edu/hrtraining/mylea. This is a resources page that you can go to. So whatever role you have within the HR system or MyUA, you can click on the little bubbles and it'll take you inside those for all the material and videos. This particular one is the supervisor piece. So you can see they have general navigation, position description, managing applicants, requisition, and offers. Those are all bubbles that you can click on. Going to look for step-by-step resources. And on the right-hand side, you can see the video. That's one of, I believe, five. So they broke it up into little pieces so that when you do need to go to DPD, you have some resources to go to, and you don't have to wait on HR at all. The system is very intuitive. The workshops are between March 21st and March 25th. There will be a full training after that point. However, these are just the hands off that we have scheduled for this time. You can go to the Google Docs and sign up. And we did ask that you go out and navigate through those resources, check them out so that we go in and navigate through is only able to respond. Are there any questions? That is a very, very brief overview. Yes.
So I might have already went through a training for this, and the main confusion seemed to be like what, once UAK jobs shut down, what to bring over to Bayjob, because it sounds like it wouldn't really bring over position descriptions and things like that. Is that true, or was that just a confusion?
Well, UAK jobs is an older system, and the information that they're able to pull out doesn't easily upload into
okay.
So they are able to pull the data. It's going to take some manipulation for you to be helping out, and then it will be able to be uploaded into my UA.
So that's for all active only, or is it just like all the old PDs as well?
For many reasons, we're pulling an active PD.
Thank you.
So I heard from one of my bosses who went through the training that part of the new tool will let new hires do their training before they start. And I wanted to know if that's accurate. Are we paying people for that time? Are we going to run into any wage and hour issues if we have people do required trainings before we actually get them, you know, on the payroll?
Right. So we will just have to set up.
Okay. So like they won't be doing their safety trainings and things like that before they actually start working for us.
No, that's not the expectation. But if somebody is, they should be compensated for that.
Would it be possible for, you know, someone to set that up without realizing it? I mean, could we end up in a situation where someone does their training in advance without realizing that that's supposed to be, you know, paid time?
It shouldn't have been tax list because the way the tax list is actually programmed, it's set to appear on the first day of work, within the first week, within the first month. So unless somebody is able to manipulate on the degree of tribunal.
Okay.
One thing that I didn't mention earlier is we do have degree users that teach campus, which is awesome because when you make the job, we actually had to go to school after to have any changes made, and it took, you know, it was like they come out to get any changes made. Our super users on campus can actually go in and make changes. So even though this is a new system, we're going to have some bumps in the road. There will be some changes made on the fly, which is very different from what we're using.
And that includes things like workflows, right? Like, I think Phil was asking, you know, there are some workflows that were inherent in the old system that were real struggles to get through, but we have different workflows for different types of things, and we can adjust those as we need to.
It does take a system to look at it, and it might take the reviewers at the system level. Mm-hmm. Change those are pretty significant changes, but the system is going to operate a little differently, and that in our current system, we tend to focus on the actual posting for budget and the actual allocation of funds, where the system is focused on the TV side. So we're going to have to take a little bit of a different look at it. Our mindset's going to have to change, but it is a more efficient way of moving into it.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Great, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Margo. So let's postpone our internal committee reports. I have two staff achievements and highlights to share, and we'll see if there's any others, and then we'll have the chancellor's report. So Ross Imbler, who's the director of annual giving at the Development and Alumni Relations Office, received the Rising Star Award in Philanthropy from the Council for Advancement and Support of Education, District 8. So that is an award that goes to outstanding individuals in the advancement field. And Ross is also a UAF alumnus. So he's grown the annual revenue from $650,000 to $650,000 a year from $400,000 a year, and reduced costs as well. So, congratulations to Ross. And then the Geophysical Institute had their awards banquet on February 26th, and the Outstanding Staff Performance Award went to Erin Albertson, who manages the Office of Proposal Development, which is a shared services model serving several units up on Westridge. And Erin is, I can say personally, an excellent staff member who delivers really high quality work and has done really great things with one of the first real shared service centers on campus. So that success is pretty transformational for us at the university as well. Does anyone else have any achievements or highlights to share? All right.
Well, good morning. Fake, maybe could you just tell me who's online?
Sure. So, could you do a quick read off? I can't see the name.
I've got Chad Olson, Christina Thompson, Chris Brooks, Connie Heisinger, Evelyn Tinsgaard, Jamie Warwick, Jessica McCallum, Leslie Walls, Stacey Havishell, Susie Fry, and Wendy Roop.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Well, good morning. Let me touch on six issues and then see if there's other areas you'd like to ask questions about. One's the budget process. Two is the current legislative session and status of bills. Three, the chancellor search. And Faye, I imagine you have reported or will be reporting on that. Have reporting?
Yeah.
Okay. Four, strategic pathways. Five, current campus events, and then six, just some other items. On the budget process, the provost and vice chancellors have developed and refined two proposals for the Planning and Budget Committee's review, one at a $26 million cut and the other at a $36 million cut. And that heavier cut came after, of course, the House subcommittee chaired by Representative Wilson deliberated several weeks ago, and there's been quite a flurry of activity related to that. I'll come back to that in a moment. This week, the provost and the vice chancellor's proposals are due to the Planning and Budget Committee this Friday, so they now go into the shared governance phase of this review. By the end of the week, of 3/28, at the end of March, we will propose or provide initial layoff and termination notices for any employees who may be affected. And that is largely due to requirements under collective bargaining. They may well be rescinded after we hear more and deliberate more relative to the legislative process. But anyway, I think that's important, those initial layoff notices out about April 1. In mid-March to mid-April, the Planning and Budget Committee will be reviewing these proposals that the vice chancellors have been dealing with. Internal discussions, the Planning and Budget Committee will hear from the vice chancellors regarding those suggested cuts, and then the vice chancellors will have an opportunity to respond to those questions in writing. The Planning and Budget Committee will provide their final findings and recommendations by mid-April and provide to the Chancellor's Cabinet. June 1 will be the final announcements relative to allocations. So that's what transpires through the spring. Again, the key is by the end of March, any notices that go out will be given at that time with the hope some will be rescinded. Work through mid-April with the Planning and Budget Committee and the Vice Chancellors, and then June 1, final announcements. Any questions relative to the general process of the budget? Item 2, the legislative session. Of course, the House Finance University Subcommittee is scheduled to finalize its budget today and tomorrow. One of the things that has been so incredibly helpful is the outpouring of support from across the state, in particular Fairbanks, and it's been mentioned several times. You've seen it in the newspaper, heard it from legislators, bumped into a number of legislators this weekend. And I want to express my thanks for those who sent an email or sent a letter or contacted legislators. It made a difference. In the same breath, when the regents are in town, don't hold back. There's been some incredible testimony the last several regents' meetings in Fairbanks, and I could cite specific examples, but it's not uncommon for 20 students to show up and show up a sense of solidarity as one spokesperson speaks and others are standing behind. Fisheries is an example. It's very, very powerful. I would encourage you to remain that engaged, and if there is a call for additional letters, to the degree you can stop and shoot an email, and frankly, since all the craziness in D.C., what, about 10 years ago with anthrax, emails are maybe the very best way to communicate with your legislator. They will pay attention where those home addresses are. Short and sweet is a great way to get the message across. They would like to see names. Always give and take in any of your messages. You may want to be highly critical. Be very balanced in your approach. But again, I've heard comments about 850 letters hitting the offices this past couple weeks, and that is a real statement. It was wonderful to see. Senate Budget Subcommittee, on the Senate side, Chairman Pete Kelly proposed a $25 million reduction from FY16. So again, we start out with Governor Walker's $15 million cut to $335. We see Representative Wilson's subcommittee suggest $300. We now see Senate Subcommittee Chair Pete Kelly come back with $325. It'll now go into conference committee, and my guess is somewhere between $300 and $325 they'll hammer out some level. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but that's kind of what we're anticipating. That would get us back to that first level of about a $26 million cut. If I don't want to be predictive or suggest I could be predictive in any manner, but anyway, those are some of the thoughts going through our mind at the moment. Relative to SB 174, the concealed carry on campus, a lot of discussion again in the press. This is playing out across the U.S. campuses across the U.S. As an aside, this is playing out across hospitals in the U.S. We dealt with the same thing in a hospital. I can't believe it. Some trustees across the country wanting to arm admissions clerks with guns. It's just an amazing topical concern, and thus we find ourselves in a fairly conservative pro-gun state, trying to figure out how best to proceed. And at the moment, the strategy and tactic is to propose 6 amendments and to see if we can work within the confines of a very strong pro-gun advocacy movement. Those amendments relate to when behavior indicates risk of harm to a student or others. 2, no guns in student dormitories or other shared student living quarters. 3, related to K-12 programs. We have a fair amount of K-12 students on K-12 campus at any given time. Three in health and counseling, and Title IX offices. Five during adjudication of staff or student disputes. And six, the requirement carry a permit. So again, for those feeling particularly strong about this, don't hold back and certainly comment to your legislators. And again, balanced and respect and thoughtful, compelling arguments are always the best case. You heard from Faye on the chancellor search, so things are going to be moving here fairly quickly with other activities. Arctic Science Week and now the chancellor search. There will be forums for you to participate and attend. Topic four, strategic pathways. So this, again, I would just like to go back and recap a few key dates. At the end of January, this was first introduced. On the heels of that retreat, Regents Retreat, at the end of the January, there was a Faculty Senate retreat, and it was introduced the same day. This is when it's first rolling out. We're now into February, and the formal Board of Regents meeting, not the retreat, and the issue is taken up, and here we are in early March. So this thing is really only about 5 weeks old. And over the course of that 5 weeks, what I have seen is more clarification on what is to transpire going forward, and what you've seen on the statewide website recently is on phase one, July to September of this year, establishing goals and measures and beginning to collect the data, begin the analysis. October to December, convene teams to analyze the data. January 2017, teams present recommendations to the president. February, president recommends changes to the regents. April to June, a year from now, teams begin to implement plans. And then July to September, implementation continues, phase two begins. So right now, the here and now is the FY17 budget. And this gap we're dealing with, which we, if I had to guess, would be in that $26 million ballpark. A lot of advocacy is continued to be needed. There may be another call for letters in action. I hope you are sensitive to that. Keep an eye on strategic pathways. You'll want to weigh in on that. It just isn't the urgency of the moment as this budget is. But this summer will be a time, not now, in between summer is a time to weigh in and make your thoughts known. Five other issues going on campus. Of course, Arctic Science Week, I was just talking to Larry Hinsman this morning, over 100 volunteers showed up. Looks like that's falling into place nicely. 1,000 scientists from across the world. This will be a wonderful showcase. Very exciting. I hope you have an opportunity to attend or to participate or to be a great ambassador for Fairbanks and for UAF as these representatives from across the nation show up. Title IX, I see Mae Marsh and Kevin just popped in. You'll hear more about this. But we just came back from Nome this past week, had a very full agenda on Title IX training, great engagement from the campus and the community in Nome. John Davies, Regent John Davies, will hold a listening session, looks like March 23rd, that's a Wednesday. So it's going to be a busy week. We have the Arctic Science Week coming up next week, and the following week would be a potential listening session on Title IX. Want to keep that, obviously, front and center, and attention paid. Over 350 persons have been trained on Green Dot training. That has been interesting, too, up in Nome, where the school district adopted this. It's really gaining some traction and seems to be a wonderful preventative mention. You may want to ask May a little bit about the Maxian software, too, another potentially powerful preventative action that we've been taking. And then finally, other highlights, a couple contributions you may want to be aware of. NASA awarded $3.5 million for a five-year project led by IARC's Alina Sparrow. $1 million donation from BP 2 weeks ago at the gala we held in town for the completion of the fourth floor, ASAP on the fourth floor of the engineering building. UAA and UAF are partnering with Washington State University on a 2+2 chemical engineering program. So, in the midst of rough sledding, there's some bright spots, and we're glad to see those as well. Any thoughts or questions or anything on top of your mind?
We had two questions online, Chancellor. The first was from Leslie Walls. Is furlough a strong possibility, and if so, when will that be determined?
All things are on the table. Furlough is a strong possibility. Those announcements will also be made towards the end of March.
Thank you. And then Chris Brooks, you had a question?
Hello,
guys. Yep.
Okay, great. Morning, Catherine. Thank you for coming by again. This is Chris Burch, Ray Art District. Can you help?
Yes.
My question is concerning the environmental business. How good are we discussions about potential layoffs of people who are not fully invested within the retirement system? There are a lot of people that are interested in talking about that.
Chris, there has not been, to my knowledge, but I am not the expert on that. And what I'll do is track that down and get it in the cornerstone this Wednesday. Would that be the best place, you think?
That could be good, yeah. Or also maybe an email back to staff council.
Okay.
As well.
Chris, you want to shoot me that? Just shoot me the email on a specific question, and I'll get it back to staff council in an email. I apologize. I don't know the ins and outs of the benefit system.
I have a quick question about, I've been hearing rhetoric coming down through kind of upper level parts of my department that from the legislature there's directions to not only cut the budget but also cut positions, and that it may come down to if a department has a cut that comes to the line, and they're able to absorb that in a different way than eliminating a position, their hand may still be forced to cut a position because of this idea of overall reducing, say, administration staff or whatever. Are you getting that kind of idea as well?
Hearing it probably like you through the media, not directly.
Okay.
As you probably know, this particular model, university model, and the autonomy of the regents is pretty significant relative to national models. Now, that you're hearing more about representation, geographic representation on the regents, you're seeing more about reaching in and perhaps being more aggressive on the operating side, not truly playing that arm's length allocation, you figure it out mode that you would typically see in a, or theoretically best see in a bureaucratic regent run or governance run function. So my sense is while you may hear that, I'm going to treat it, and I am, as largely heads up, a certain amount of noise, a certain amount of interest, a certain amount of natural curiosity, but the authority to do that really does not exist, and the effort is to preserve as much as possible jobs.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
Do you have an estimate for how many jobs would be lost if they go with a $26 million cut?
You could, a job, rough numbers, $100,000 per job. So you can make a calculation there. But as I just mentioned, we're looking at efficiencies, overhead savings that are not going to be touching lives. So I'm going to hold on that at the moment. As we hear more and we see what comes out of the Senate, we'll have a better idea, and then we can be more specific. But at the moment, the choice would be to to find administrative efficiencies before jobs. Not a lot of discussion has been raised, but we're not at that level. I suspect we're going to see maybe not this year as strong of encouragement as we'll see in future years on early retirement.
It might be worth noting on the early retirement as well that one of the challenges with that in a budget year is it requires a significant upfront chunk of cash, basically, to implement to get then the longer-term savings. And that was something that there was a lot of discussion about last year as well, and there wasn't necessarily the political will in Juneau at the time as well to get that really squared away. Because they would have to budget a large sum to get that action in the first place. Any other questions for the chancellor? Nicole reporting online. Thanks. Any others in the room?
Do you have any update on the college utilities switchover? I saw a date of March 1, but I haven't seen anything said.
Second question to get back to you, I don't.
Thanks. Anything else? Great. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today, Chancellor.
You're very welcome. And again, I would just like to remind you, as things get tight, if we ask for letters, if you can find the time to shoot those emails, very, very helpful and powerful. Thank you.
Is it worth it to send repeat email if you've already sent one to contact them a second time?
Yes, it is. The verbatim note of last week may not be the best, another look or compelling argument, but it's always helpful. Short and sweet is good. Does not have to be in, a page. It can simply be five lines, three lines.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Circling back to the internal committee report, elections did not meet. Membership and rules.
We have a written report attached.
Great, thank you. Rural Affairs. Okay, Chris, we'll come right back to that. Staff.
Okay.
Oh, you ready?
Yeah, right here.
Yep.
Okay. Our next meeting will be
in exec board. I'm really excited about this guest speaker's bit, and I hope that's something that we'll be able to share effectively with the full group as well to hear more about our rural sites facilities. Staff affairs?
Yeah, so we do not have a report attached. However, under new business, we have a resolution that we'll be talking about when we get to that point.
Great. Thank you. And University Advocacy, no report. Great. Thanks, Jamie. So we have a couple more minutes here for new business really quickly. We talked about the opening of nominations for the officer election. And we talked about the Chancellor finalist campus visit. I expect that there will be a communication this week, both announcing who the finalists are, some information about them, and then the dates and the schedule for the visits. There'll be four different staff sessions, basically, starting one Friday, and then I think it's a Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, or something like that the next week. So, and at various times and locations, but one with each of the finalists. So SB 174, the guns on campus bill. So I took this from Brad without telling him I was going to put it on the agenda. Sorry, Brad. So Brad, for Staff Alliance, had pulled the resolution that we passed at Staff Alliance the last time this came up. So in 2014, this bill, basically the same bill, came forward and was tabled at the time. And so Staff Alliance had passed a resolution basically endorsing the university's position and opposing the bill. And so if we want to maybe start with some conversation or discussion on that, and then they did attach a resolution that sort of an update from that prior language. But let's maybe start with some discussion before going to a resolution. We've got about 5 minutes here before May is scheduled to start, and I want to respect her time. So we can get this conversation started, and we might have to come right back around to it.
Brad, I would defer to Brad since I think he was the origin of some of the language. I feel personally very strongly that that it's worth it for staff council to take a position. I think that if you follow the university's position on this, then I think the chancellor mentioned that the strategy of working from the assumption that it's going to pass and trying to amend the bill that we assume is going to pass, I personally think that they have that wrong. I think this isn't just, you know, imaginary. I mean, I've talked to people like Adam Woolen, and there hasn't, I think even within the, perhaps within the House it's a different story, but within the Senate, I have it switched around. Perhaps within the Senate, it's safer to assume that it's going to pass. In the House, I don't think that's the assumption. I think that there are a lot of people that are on the fence. I think that the university, especially employees and participants at the ground level at the university taking a strong position on this, could move people in one direction or the other.
So I would just chime in that, certainly my own personal position on this is opposition to the bill, but if that's the will of the group, I think it's worth passing a resolution because I think that the students made it clear when they were advocating in Juneau that they were opposed to it. We've certainly seen plenty of pieces published from the faculty opposing it. I think that, there's value in saying the staff, faculty, and students of the university don't want this bill to pass. It's, we're the ones who would be directly impacted. So, if that is how we feel, then I certainly think it's worth passing, but I realize that not everyone may feel the same way.
So I would suggest that we postpone this, but not to the next meeting, because I don't think we have that kind of time with the legislative session. I say we take this and do an email vote on it by the end of this week or possibly by the end of next week. Because there's a few edits that need to be made, and I think that conversation about the language I used is we support the University of Alaska in their position, but the University of Alaska has moderated their position from opposition to we're okay with it as long as you make these changes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a discussion we should have is, are we agreed with the UA's current position, or are we, or do we disagree and we support it, or do we say we don't think any compromise is okay? We think the bill is not a good one.
My only concern with that timeline is that Staff Alliance meets tomorrow, and we'll have a similar resolution before us. I would feel a lot better voting on that resolution at Staff Alliance, knowing how UAF Staff Council feels. So even if we had a kind of a discussion and a general pulse taking maybe before Staff Alliance tomorrow would be helpful. We could do maybe what we could do is a quick poll this afternoon if people could commit to responding to that. But yeah, I think the wordsmithing, you're right, occurred to me this morning as well, that we're a little contradictory in the final bit of the resolution there, saying, well, we oppose the bill, but we support the university's position, which is to modify the bill. And Chris's comments that he thinks it might require more than an email vote. Yeah, I think we should have some discussion now, Chris, and have some talking, but I think that the active voting probably could be done via email so that people have a little bit of time to think it over. But we certainly can't wait till next month. Any other comments online first? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that it's a really big deal. And when I read President Johnson's solution, I thought it was really good. It's really quick to pass in a way. But we also have to look at if this conference here actually getting it from the national president. I'm not aware of any school that you may allow.
Yeah, there are actually, there was one that was highly publicized in Utah recently because a very prominent guest speaker had death threats made against her, or threats of mass violence made at her event, and they could not, they said, well, we can't stop anyone with guns from coming to your event, even in light of this threat. So she canceled her talk, and I think there are a couple others who have similar things, but have not yet had them play out as publicly.
Colorado State has a concealed carry.
Was that a public school or a private one? Do you know?
It was public, yeah.
Public school? Okay.
Yeah, it was an action by their legislature that then almost immediately had that follow-up. But I think, yeah, Colorado as well is public.
At least one school. I don't know if it's all public schools in Texas. I think one thing that is different about us is the bill on the table doesn't require a concealed carry permit. And I think even the University of Utah requires a concealed carry permit. Does anyone know for sure? Okay.
So we're talking, by the way, the resolution that is in draft form is page 14 of the agenda. It's attachment number 6. I just realized there was one bit where I left Staff Alliance in on the last line, where it should say Staff Council as well. Any other comments?
But I also like the idea of saying that the staff, students, and faculty have all, like, it's clear that there's a lot of opposition to it.
Yeah, I think this would be kind of the document on the staff side, and then I think communicating it, we could kind of compile it with the others, but that we did talk about this at System Governance Council, where it would have been everyone, you know, all at once, and the group had decided that first they would need the individual pieces to kind of come together. Jane?
I just know from a few conversations that I've had that a lot of my constituents are not exactly supportive of the idea that
you know, it's okay as long as we make some concessions to the bill, and as long as we make some changes to the bill, you know, we're going to lose it anyway. We might as well try to make changes. I feel like there are people who disagree with that, and I feel like if that's not how we feel, that's not what we should pass, what we should support.
Okay, so what I've been hearing so far is discussion that, you know, that we would want to consider amending it to basically strike the University of Alaska and Board of Regents and just say the staff council opposes SB 174. Matthew, you had comments?
I did. So from my ears, what I've been hearing is that with the whole budget cuts and it being an unstable time and talk of actually getting rid of our on-campus police department and, you know, shifting that to the state troopers or whatever, that suddenly we allow guns on campus, but yet we don't have our, you know, kind of dedicated police force anymore. And, you know, what happens if something were to happen, especially from the Red Line, having people on campus and living there. And so it just doesn't feel like the right time to kind of, it just, everything is too unstable. We don't know what our campus will look like in a couple of years to allow something kind of this big of a change. That's what it feels like.
Okay, so I know now that we've got May on the agenda, and I don't want to eat up all her time or put her off. So I think what I would like to do then is this afternoon maybe send out an edited version of this and do a quick poll. So not an official vote to pass it, but maybe just a quick poll. Are we generally, you know, oppose, support with amendments, or support something along those lines? You know, oppose the bill, support the university position of an amended bill, or just support the bill in general, so that I can use that tomorrow with Staff Alliance, and then we'll try this week to have actually pass a resolution. Does that sound okay process-wise to everyone?
If we're going to do a poll this afternoon, why not see if we pass the resolution
this afternoon? This afternoon. I mean,
if people are comfortable with polling on it, would we be comfortable with just straight up voting?
I would rather see the poll because the resolution is already chosen to pass. I like the poll giving you the three options.
Okay. And yeah, Chris mentioned that if we voted on it this afternoon, then we wouldn't necessarily have had time to get our constituents' opinion on the overall issue. I would say that I wouldn't want to get all the constituents' input on the resolution and try and finagle, you know, over 1,000 people's opinion on a resolution, but on the issue as a whole, talking to your constituents about the issue this week and then maybe passing a resolution. But I do expect that Staff Alliance will probably pass a resolution tomorrow, which is representing the staff of the system. And I think that, Chris, is just happens to be the timeline we're in with the legislative session. So let's circle back to that. Let's come back before we wrap up our meeting today. But right now I want to hand it over to May to talk about Title IX pieces. And so we have a handout from May as well in the agenda. There's a Title IX scorecard.
Thank you for allowing me time to give you an update on Title IX. I have with me today Kevin Calvarada, and he is my Title IX investigator. He's my lead investigator, so I'll let him introduce himself and tell you a little bit about his background.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Calderera. I'm the investigator here in UAF for Title IX, Disability, and Discrimination. My background is I've had 10 years of law enforcement experience on the federal side dealing with sexual assaults and fraud cases and a bunch of other stuff. And I was hired on in the university by October 2014.
What you have before you today is our Title IX scorecard. The president was looking for a way to measure and gauge the progress of being in compliance with Title IX. And so the Title IX teams from UAF, UAA, and UAS came together to create this criteria. We did research into all of the documents and guidance that had been put out by the Office for Civil Rights, and we also researched all of the settlement agreements that other universities had entered into. And so we broke them down into things that are required by OCR and then the things that we see in the settlement agreements that have not yet been written by OCR, we included those as what we call best practices. So you can see from the document, and if you'd like a copy of the criteria, I can also give that to you because that's what we're using to weigh our compliance. And you can see by the documents that one of our biggest issues is policy, in that our policies have not been updated for a very long time. So the president gave a charge to a group from UAA, UAF, and UAS to develop new policy. We came together on the 25th and the 26th of February, and then the three Title IX coordinators met again last week, and we have developed a draft policy. And what we did is we extracted all of the discrimination, all of the sexual assault, all of harassment based on a protected status out of the code of conduct, out of the HR, and we put it all in draft. We put it all into 0102, so it is a standalone policy. It makes it simple. It's all in one place rather than have to go through the entire Board of Regents policy to find that. Hopefully by the end of the week, the president gave us till the 1st of April to have a draft on his desk. And so we have a draft of the policy for the 0102. All the others have policy and the reg. We do not have the reg completely rewritten for 0102. But you will see what we have finished coming out the latter part of this week for comment. And so there will be approximately 2 weeks for you to read it, review it, and give us feedback on how to make it the very best policy that we can. Any questions about the scorecard or where we're headed with this?
Are you sending that out with the cornerstone for comment? How is that going to go out for comment?
I'll be sending it directly to Nicole, who will get it to you.
Great. And so, May, is this, are most of the changes in the policy basically just aligning with federal regulations, or are there things in there that we have some discretion in?
It's all to align us with federal regulation, so we're sure that we're in compliance. What the guidance says is that it has to be easily understood. And so we're taking a just revamping the whole thing to make it easily understood. And then there's a lot of guidance on exactly what has to be in there, and that's what we put in our criteria, what we could extract from OCR. And so that's what we're using to guide us as we rewrite the policy.
Okay. Thank you.
If you want, when I send out the policy, I'll also send out the criteria to Nicole, so you'll have that also.
That would be helpful. I think, when we do our governance review of policies, we've tended in the past to kind of look at things a little differently depending on whether it's just changing to meet needed regulations, in which case we might be able to say, well, this is clear, or we don't love this, but we get that we don't have a choice in it. So, the places where there's discretion are helpful to know, because that's where we feel like our comments might.
I would say that 90% of it, we have to have it in there. We may be able to change the wording or something like that, but it's just, this is bare bones basics of what has to be in our policy to be in compliance.
Okay. Great. Yeah, those criteria would be really helpful,
okay.
too.
Let's
and I think
too.
That context is helpful
yeah.
in shaping.
I'll send that to Nicole when I get back. And then as soon as we are ready to go out with the policy and the regs, then you'll have those.
Great. Thanks. And then when we compile and send our feedback, are you the best point of contact
yeah.
for us to send it back?
Send it back
through?
To me. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions online for May? Okay. Anyone in the room?
Can I bring up another topic?
While
I'm here, I want to also tell you that Chancellor Powers has asked us to develop a strategic plan, not just for compliance with Title IX, but also to guide our preventive efforts. And so we came together as a team, and we have developed a strategic plan. So at some point, I'd like to brief that. Not today. I know that we don't have enough time, but just as an introduction, I'd like to brief that to you also.
Great. That would be excellent. We might take a look at our agenda for next month, which I know is also already filling up, but I think that would be very helpful for us to see and to weigh in on.
Well, you might have other things that we can put in there to improve it.
Great. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. Sorry, May, real quickly, one more question. When we get the policy for a comment and feedback, would you like us to share it with our constituents and then compile feedback, or just keep it within the screen?
Share it with everyone.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. So, with an eye on the clock, circling back to guns on campus and our process for that, again, with the timeline of Staff Alliance meeting tomorrow and entertaining a resolution there, because of that timeline, even knowing that this is not something that maybe there's 100% consensus on the campus, I would feel best if we passed a resolution this afternoon, since there will be a resolution on the table tomorrow. But I could also ask that the resolution on the table tomorrow gets passed via email. That just pushes the timeline back where, as this is moving through the legislature, it's tricky. So maybe we could do a quick poll now on process. So I'd say our maybe two options are vote on the resolution this afternoon is option one. Option two is poll this afternoon and vote via email, say, by Friday, knowing that Staff Alliance will be taking it up tomorrow. So if we could just do a quick poll on the process, is that membership and rules, is that a legal way for us to handle this?
Do you have an opinion?
I don't think there's any rule against just doing a straw poll.
Okay. Yeah, if we could do a straw poll on kind of our process for this, that would be great. Okay, so I see people online voting too, and we'll do a show of hands in the room. And so people online, if you just, comment, that's great. In the room, a show of hands for option one, which is resolution vote today. And in the room, option two, vote via email later this week. Okay.
Well, I was just going to observe. I think that it seems like what Faye's asking for is an idea about our general feeling or even a consensus on staff council about which way we feel before Staff Alliance meeting tomorrow. I guess in my opinion, it's hard to imagine if we don't have an idea, if representatives don't have an idea about how their unit feels one way or the other on SB 174 now,
I guess it's a little bit hard for me to imagine that changing between now and this afternoon, or even now between now and tomorrow.
Yeah, I think with this afternoon, it gives us time to clean up the language for the resolution instead of trying to do that right now before we adjourn. A Google survey to our constituents, feeling of the group. Yeah, we could. It's just the timeline, again, with that, which is, you know, do we send it out to everyone and ask them to respond today or this week? And then if we ask them to respond this week, does that mean we're staff council is voting next week, which then, if in the meantime, does that mean I'm putting Staff Alliance off and asking them not to wait until after we've voted on the staff council resolution, which then pushes a Staff Alliance resolution representing all staff of the university until at least the end of next week. And meanwhile, I don't know how rapidly this is moving through the legislature. So that's my concern with the timeline. I know UAS Staff Council has already passed a resolution. I know UAA has been talking about it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe UAA will say we're not ready tomorrow as well. But I just want to be really sensitive to the fact that the legislature is moving quickly on this, and we probably don't have a very big window to respond in. Yeah. Okay.
I was just wondering if instead of addressing this campus-wide, if Staff Alliance is going to be addressing this tomorrow, what's the possibility of Staff Alliance being able to send out a survey to all major MAUs and rural campuses so that that information just goes straight to Staff Alliance and we skip the middle man?
Yeah, that's an option. Again, with the sending it out to everyone, we still get into some of the timeline issues, which is, all right, we send it out to everyone, how long do we give them to respond? And then Staff Alliance has to compile that feedback and analyze and then come back and take a resolution. So that is an option. I don't know precisely when this is going to be voted on or kind of how much time we have to share it. The last time it came up, UAF Staff Council did not pass a resolution. We just said, okay, Staff Alliance passed a resolution. That's good enough. Yeah, we'll stand by that.
I do want to say, sorry, Brad, I do want to say I have respect for Chris Brooks' position, which is that, you know, the representatives are representatives. And if it's not clear to a representative how the people in his or her unit feel, it's hard to take a position as a representative of those constituents.
Yeah, especially where we have new representatives as well, too, who haven't been had that relationship with our unit for a long time. Brad?
It looks like the bill's right now still in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and then it's going to Finance after that.
Okay, so we might have a little bit of time.
So it would be possible for you to ask Staff Affairs to have their opinion later than tomorrow, right? I mean, that's really
Staff Alliance, yeah. I mean, I'm the chair of Staff Alliance, so I can personally say, okay, you know, this will be a draft. I won't have a vote on it. You know, we'll do it via email, and we'll do a campus-wide poll first. Procedurally, it's best, in my opinion, that when Staff Alliance acts on something, it's got resolutions from the universities in place. Because then it's very clear that it's been through the full process. But, you know, we could do a quick staff, all staff poll through Staff Alliance with like a turnaround, you know, of a day, basically. Which is, you know, just saying, okay, this isn't a lot of time. If you're out, sorry. Turnaround of a day, share those results back. And then, you know, basically have it a quick turnaround for an endorsement here. And then with Staff Alliance, if we do that, I would want that once we say, okay, we're ready to have a vote, that basically we vote that day with Staff Council and then with Staff Alliance. So
I feel like in my perspective, I would want both. Like, what are this body and then the trouble, just in case, like, say that, or not the, the whole body, say everything comes back and all three options are equally weighed, you know, like, it's very doubtful that will happen, but, or two of the options are equal, it's like, now what do I do? Because there's not a clear outcome. So it would be nice to know what each staff council and each MAU feels, and then even from a straw poll or if we have an official resolution, I would want both that information. So if it's really close, if we do a full staff survey, then those staff council kind of ideas will push it over to one side or the other.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, and Nicole pointed out, yeah, if we do it as a quick survey, it's a free option survey. There's no comment. Yeah, we don't have probably the ability to turn it around with, you know, actually compiling real feedback from people. It would just be I oppose this entirely. I will endorse the university amendment version, or I support this. Yeah, Carrie.
I feel that most everybody who has an opinion right now on it would be able to respond very quickly to any request for a vote. They already know how they feel. And so you asking them to get back within a day, I don't know that there's a problem with that.
I was just talking with Nicole. What we can do, how about this then? We do a UAS staff poll today. It goes out today. We ask them to respond today. We mark it as urgent. We just say, today, you know, poll on this. We'll share the results. And then I'll have the results of the whole UAS staff going into Staff Alliance tomorrow. And then we can, at Staff Alliance, maybe agree to do an email vote on the resolution on Friday. And that would give staff council maybe a time to do an email vote on a resolution before Friday. So that way we still get something out this week, but you guys have kind of a sense from the poll of where people stand on it. And then that way we're not trying to go through like 8 levels of administrative work.
That makes sense to me.
Okay. So casting aside the first one, I'm seeing nodding heads. Is anyone opposed to that process? A quick poll of all UAS staff today, and then I'll go, you know, Nate and I will go to Staff Alliance tomorrow, see if we can agree to pass the resolution via email. If it's overwhelming among UAS staff, then maybe Staff Alliance will pass something tomorrow in UAS.
I'm going to assume it's going to be pretty quick because I looked at the smoking survey that we did in 2014. Which we had an amazingly quick response. And it looks like we had around 400 responses within the first day.
Yeah, if we do a respond today option. Yeah. Okay. Is anybody opposed to that process? All right. I know this was a very convoluted discussion. I didn't have a clear plan in my mind when I brought this forward. Okay. All right. So, Chris, I know that's a faster timeline, but at least it does give that vehicle for unit feedback. I hope that makes you or helps you be a little more comfortable with the timeline. All right. Run through a couple other things real quickly. I know we are a little bit over time already. So, we have a motion to amend the bylaws, sections 6 and 7. From membership and roles.
Hey, thanks everybody. So this is just continuing the work that we've been doing of reviewing the bylaws, our 2-year process that we're almost done with. There's only most of the motion today are some simple clarifications, grammatical changes, but there's two kind of bigger changes. One is the way the bylaws are written right now. It says that you can have a vote and we would set aside the bylaws and not operate under the rules. And we felt that this was didn't make sense. In Robert's Rules of Order, there's a provision for
setting aside Robert's Rules of Order, we can vote on that as a body and say, to get something done really quickly, we're going to temporarily suspend our use of Robert's Rules and do a quicker vote and things like that. But we should never be suspending our bylaws. So the bylaws should just be kind of graven in stone. So far, everyone we've talked to agrees with that, but that would be one of the things that we're changing today, if you all agree. And the second one is also kind of simple and kind of, some people might think it was nitpicky, changing the definition of quorum. So we're going to change it to the same wording as Robert's Rules has, which is a simple majority. Right now it's written up as 51%, which might sound like the same thing. But if you have, don't know we'll ever get the size, but you have 200 people, then if 101 show up, you actually don't have 51%. So it's just a piddly little detail, but this makes us align with Robert's Rules, and it actually gives us the simple majority that most people, I think, are expecting when they see 51%. And we did expand one section to include individuals who are participating via telecommunication. So just even though it's implied or could be written, considered as implied, we wanted to just make sure it was in there explicitly.
So, Nicole, so now that Richard used to his committee report every month was, yep, I met with myself. He was the only member of the elections committee. So this will be good. It might also force some of our traditionally understaffed committees to have an extra incentive to for more people to participate.
So, is that switched over, Nicole?
We're ready to go? Okay, so, and the motion doesn't require a second because when it comes from a committee, the second is implied, correct? So, we can do a roll call vote.
Isn't it that you don't need a motion anymore, so don't we still need a second?
I thought that the second was included because the committee has more than one person on it.
Okay.
So if a committee puts it forward, but we could, someone could second it right now just to be safe.
If there's not a second, we're in trouble.
Somebody?
I'll second it.
Okay. So, all kinds of seconds. All right. Great. So, roll call vote, Nicole.
Can you guys watch the screen for me?
Yeah.
Evelyn Pinsgaard? She's still there. Chad Olson.
Aye.
Carrie Santora.
Aye.
Leslie Walls.
Aye.
Jamie Warwick.
I think Jamie.
She might have left, yeah.
Oh, and Evelyn.
Got Evelyn. Thanks, Evelyn. Jesse Atencio. Sue Mitchell. Wendy Roop. Super Wendy. Chris Brooks.
Aye.
Jane Grossclose.
Aye.
Matthew Mund.
Aye.
Jill Dewey Davidson. Susie Fry. Thanks, Susie. Stacey Havishill. Thanks, Stacey. Brandy?
Aye.
Katie?
Aye.
Jessica Ormstrong?
Aye.
Emily Nelson?
Aye.
Kara Axe?
Aye.
Dina Jala? Jessica McCallum? There's Jessica. Jessica Allard?
Aye.
Kimberly Knudsen? Greg Crick?
Aye.
Lena Krutikoff?
Aye.
Janelle Merrifield?
Aye.
Phil Jacobs?
Aye.
Christina Thompson?
Aye.
Amanda Wall?
Aye.
Melissa Parks?
Aye.
Trish Winters?
Aye.
Connie Heisinger?
Yeah.
Thanks, Connie. Samara Tabor?
Aye.
The motion passed.
Yes. Thank you again to that to membership and rules for making your way through this. It's important. All right, we have another resolution coming from staff upstairs proposing modifications to the UA regulation review of layoff or recall decision. There's a draft resolution attached.
So the resolution that we've drafted is on page 9 through 11, 12, through 12. Sorry about that. So we've been talking as this body about the changes to the layoff procedure now for about a year. There were different points in time in which we were going to act on it, and Staff Alliance was going to act on it, and then there was a subcommittee that was going to act on it. And anyway, so we have this resolution here that basically addresses the three major concerns that we had with the changes to the layoff grievance process that is now a layoff review process. And basically our whereas statements are those three concerns. I'd like to open it up for discussion if we have any questions about that or about the different things that we decided were our primary concerns. We do have the attached recommended changes that we would have, but again, this is a draft, and we're open for more suggestions if the body does have any.
So are there any comments or questions for staff affairs?
Thank you for doing this, because I think this is really important.
I believe that we're pretty happy with the way it's worded. If this body wants to vote on this today, we're happy to do that. If there's no questions or feedback or comments other than
yeah.
Thank you, Trish. I agree. So basically, before we vote, let me just go through those three things real quick. The first is that the way that the new regulation is written, the reviewer who reviews a case of a that's brought forward by the employee, there's no verbiage making sure that person is different than the person who initiated the original layoff. So that person could conceivably be the same person. Also, there's no maximum amount of time for the review process to take. The employee has 10 days to initiate to request the review. The reviewer basically has an unlimited amount of time to consider it. Once they've made a decision, they have a certain amount of time to forward their decision to the chancellor, who then has a certain amount of time to act, to respond. But we were concerned about the fact that the review itself could take essentially an unlimited amount of time while a laid-off employee is basically watching their 30-day notice tick away. There also isn't any specified protections if the case is found in favor of the employee. So we added in a clause that basically says that they are entitled to the same protections as a recalled employee. And that's mostly having to do with benefits and leave.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Is there any particular reason, maybe this is the last thing, I don't know that, but the wording was chosen 10 working days instead of this day?
The day is, throughout the regulations, generally speaking, they use working days, and that was the phrasing that was used before, I believe. And the idea was to have that period of time, the whole span of that timeline fit within that 30-day working, or that 30-day notice period.
Yeah, Chris, I don't really know why, though, we use working and not business.
I agree with you.
I think that it ultimately is applied the same way. I don't think it means that if I, you know, happen to be, if somebody happens to work that weekend, that I get 2 days less time. So I think they're used interchangeably.
Yeah, the reason I ask that question is what happens if someone gets laid off during the Christmas holiday break and they enter the hard closure, where some people are actually required to work? How does some people get treated differently than others? If the real estate are in the Network Operations Center and you're required, both your job normally requires you to work that week, how does that affect them?
I'm not sure. A part of me wants to point out that I feel like that's kind of a different, related to a different section of this, because that would actually refer to like the layoff notice period timeline and rather than the review period timeline. But I'm not sure how that would typically happen.
I think that might be something that is worth, like you said, treating a bit as a separate issue, just because that phrasing is used so consistently throughout the regulations that it might just be worth asking for clarification on as kind of a separate item, because I think there are several things that would impact.
Well, let me clarify real quick, moving on. If normally, during a hard closure, most people have off during that week. So if someone got terminated, say, on Friday, the Friday before a hard closure, I'm assuming that once school starts again, that's when the same-day work days kick in. Is that correct?
And I think, Chris, what we're saying is we're not sure there, and we're not sure in pretty much every other place in regulation where it uses working instead of business, how that would be impacted around closure periods. Well, but I think it's a bigger issue than the specific section of regulation.
And really, working and business, with both of those words, it still applies. The question is more, is that a university working day or is that a working day related to that particular employee's position? That's the question, I would say, related to that. And without doing more research, I'm not sure if that's maybe already addressed. It could be addressed
somewhere else,
and maybe in relation to the regulations with hard closure. I'm not sure without more research.
So maybe we can just take that as an action item to research first and see if it's addressed, and if not, we can reach out to Artis Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree that it would be worth clarifying that for the sake of everyone knowing for every resolution going forward.
Mm-hmm. All right, so...
If you're laid off, the clock never starts because there are no more.
Yeah. All right. So it sounded like people were pretty interested in just voting on this today. So you guys brought the motion... Would you bring it forward officially instead of just as a draft?
Yeah, I would bring this forward for a vote officially.
Okay. Someone want a second testing? Okay. Thank you. All right, so all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, guys. I know this was a long time coming. I think you did some excellent work and really clearly stated the main concerns that we have. All right. I know on committee reports, Brad had something to share on compensation.
Yeah, I'll get the written report out through Nicole to send out to everyone. Apologies, that wasn't part of the agenda. In our most recent meeting, we had a conversation with Tara Ferguson, UA's Director of Compensation, and I just wanted to highlight a few things from that session. We did ask her about furlough. Is that something that is being talked about? And she said that discussion's not happening at her level. She did agree with something that Tom Langdon, the statewide staff group president, had said that the current administration isn't a fan of furlough, but she really couldn't comment further.
We asked her about the proposed 2.5% for FY17. The governor's budget had not included funding for non-represented staff, but had included funding for union staff. And we asked her, what is UA's approach, you know, going forward? Are we going to see, you know, that zeroed out if there's no funding for it? Or will UA find, money for it? What will they do? Will they fund only a portion of it? And she said that it was too soon to say, probably wouldn't have an answer on that until June.
I can comment a little bit on that briefly. The regents had said that if union staff got increases, they were committed to non-union staff getting it. And that number is, when we talk about the budget scenarios and the gaps that are being planned for at UAS, that $26 million and $36 million number, that includes the unfunded compensation as part of that gap. So the budget planning assumptions have included that unfunded increase, basically. That's not to say it's 100% certain that they would fund it. Basically, it's, you know, then they have to find it from somewhere else, which means cuts in other places. But that's what's been said publicly so far.
We also asked her about step increases and salary compression. And she said two really interesting things. One was that if there was a 2.5% increase for this coming fiscal year, that she thought it should be a split across the board increase and a step increase. And she further clarified that she thought we need to restart step increases, which is, I thought, was very interesting. We've had one since the new payroll system was introduced in FY10. Not new payroll system, but the new compensation grid. She also said that they look at salary compression, and they find that most offices are fair. They don't have salary compression, which really surprised me, and I'm hoping we'll be able to get data from her office to corroborate that, because I don't see how we wouldn't have salary compression if we really haven't had step increases in 6-7 years. And then the last thing I wanted to share is that you may have seen ASEA, which is the primary state union that probably most closely corresponds to us. They're the organization that tried to unionize, one of them that tried to unionize UA staff a few years ago. Their current proposed contract for the next 3 years doesn't include any cost of living increases, but it does still include merit increases. And I just wanted to highlight that to all of us, that to the best of my knowledge, merit increases, step increases for state employees have never gone away. So when you see that language saying no 0% increase, that still includes their yearly, or might be every other year, possibility for a regular increase, which is something we don't have.
Any questions for Brad? Thanks, Brad. And I know Kim had a quick announcement as well, too, before we go to roundtable.
I'm Kim Kaysen, and I work with environmental health and safety. And a few years ago, we had a safety perception survey in reference to occupational safety. And I don't know if any of you all remember it, but it's been about 3 years, and we are going to have another one beginning March 21st through April 4th. And I would like to have your feedback. We received a lot of good feedback from the first survey, and we've made some changes to the training so that they're shorter and they're not so many, and then there's some other things we made changes to. So if you guys would please take the survey when it comes out, and we are going to be, you know, with budget cuts, we are offering some incentives like some iPads and stuff too, so to help encourage it. And we had over a 50% response the first survey, and we'd like to get that again. So if you can pass that around.
What was the kickoff date? March what?
21st.
Thanks, Kim. All right, I know we are now a half hour over schedule, which makes me want to scream. So I'm real sorry for that, but I know we had some really important discussion today, particularly on that guns bill issue, which I think is a meaty one. So.
Before we begin, we need to talk about the Civil Task Force. We met on Friday. The Joint Health Committee voted to utilize the $1 million over the Civil Task Force for benefits. Although growing up, between 4 to 15 cents per vehicle area.
That's excellent news, Leslie. Thank you. And so, everyone, that is attached as well on page 22. It's attachment 8. Or, sorry, 21. Yeah. Great. All right, so let's go to roundtable discussion now. And the recording, and we'll go off the record for roundtable.